Radio Netherlands, the Dutch International Service, presents Hoppin' Alive, a program about the revival of 30s swing jazz.
Lindy Hop is a dance that's done to swing music, and it's swinging what brings life together.
Lindy Hop is back. Amsterdam has rediscovered the American feel-good dance. Hundreds of enthusiastic hoppers recently enjoyed a weekend full of workshops, masterclasses, and parties with special guest star Frankie Manning, the man who rocked the cradle of this happy dance. Join Lisbeth de Backer as she gets the rhythm.
This is Frankie Manning, and I'm a Lindy Hopper from America. Lindy Hop is a partner dance, so you get an opportunity to dance with a young lady. And when I say young ladies, I'm speaking of anybody from 89 years on down, you understand? And it's a very happy dance. I've never seen a Lindy Hopper on the floor dancing who wasn't smiling. So it's a wonderful exercise also. So I think Lindy Hop is a perfect dance for anybody to do.
I'm Robert Cullen. I'm from Eindhoven, a city in the south of the Netherlands, and I'm a Lindy Hop enthusiastic.
So you're here tonight because there's a big party, but Lindy Hop is unfamiliar to me. Could you describe to me what Lindy Hop actually is?
Well, Lindy Hop's a very enthusiastic dance, full of improvisation, just like the jazz music itself. And it's a predecessor of rock and roll dancing, which is also very enthusiastic, but the music is really different, so the dance as well. What you do see is elements of the Charleston in the Lindy Hop, and the Charleston is the thing that came before Lindy Hop. So the enthusiasm of Charleston is something that you really see reflected in the Lindy Hop.
Now, Lindy Hop, it's a strange name to me. Where did the name come from?
Well, the name came from someone, Shorty George, actually, who was a dancer in the Savoy Ballroom, the biggest ballroom in New York, where they danced Lindy Hop. And it was in the time that Charles Lindbergh went across the ocean, and all the newspapers said, Lindy Hops the Atlantic. So when the dancer was asked, well, what kind of dance do you do? He said, well, I'm doing the Lindy Hop, referring to this article in the newspaper.
When the sun set in the sky, flowers never die, babe. Friends don't pass you by.
When I was a youngster, even just a kid, like 3 or 4 years old, I think music was kind of getting into my system, because I would go to church with my parents, and the church, they didn't have, like nowadays, they might have a full band in a church nowadays, but back in those days, they just had like tambourines and people stomping their feet and clapping their hands, and it made such a wonderful rhythm, and I used to be in there just jumping up and down and shouting, you know, just because that music sounded like that to me, and I kind of grew up with that around me, and I think it just got into my system from then.
Part of you also grew up in the Savoy, yes, dance hall. Can you tell me a little bit about your first experience there?
Most of the kids around my time, they had a desire to go to Savoy Ballroom. Everyone wanted to go, including me, and because I didn't think I was such a good dancer, and I felt that if I go to Savoy Ballroom, that I wouldn't be able to get a dance because the girls would look at me and say, I don't want to dance with that guy. He can't dance. So there's a group of us got together, and we said, well, I tell you what, let's take our girls along with us, and we go to ballroom, and we have somebody to dance with because we know them other girls are not going to dance with us. So that's what we did. We went to Savoy Ballroom, and, you know, we were intimidated, you know, because we were youngsters, and we didn't feel like that. We got out there, people would be laughing at us, you know. So we just walked around the ballroom and looked at other people. And eventually we saw a group of people was crowding around some dancers. So we walked over in the corner and we watched those people dancing. And our eyes popped, you know, because we had never seen dancing like that. So it was And I say to one of my friends, I say, hey, Billy, I'm going over there and see what those guys are doing over the other side. And that's how we actually started in the Savoy Room, by watching and dancing to the great music that they had there.
How come are you such a central person in the development of Lindy Hop? What's your role?
Lindy Hop was like fairly new. It started in 1927. And most of the dancers that were dancing was dancing like ballroom dancers in an upright position. But when I started dancing, I didn't feel like dancing so straight up, you know, like ballroom dancers with boards in their back, you know. So I started to relax. And like when I would swing out, you know what swing out is, don't you? You don't know what swing out is? You better come to the class so I can teach you something. But anyway, when we swing a girl out, I would be almost parallel to the floor. You know, my leg would be extended and I would be leaning forward and I would look like I was flying, you know. And most of the other youngsters around me, they started watching me dance. And they kind of say, oh, yeah, man, that's great. This cat is swinging. He's flying. You know? So everybody else started to dance like I was dancing. And that's how it kind of started off. And eventually I created the very first air step in Lindy Hop. And that kind of gave me a name. Say, oh, Frankie, he created the first air step in Lindy Hop, which when it was created, it made the dance much more productive and much more exciting.
What does an air step look like?
Well, air step, you want me to show you?
Yeah.
Well, actually, air step is like when you're dancing and then all of a sudden the girl is on the floor and then she's not on the floor anymore. She's flying through the air and she lands like in time with music. So we call it an air step because it's a continuation of the music. I mean, there were lifts in dancing long before that. But what you do in lifts is like you, like in ballroom dancing, you pick a young lady up and you sit her down gently on the floor. You know, in Lindy Hop, you don't do that. You pick her up and fling her somewhere, you know. And she just flies through the air, and she's flying with the music, and she lands with the music, and she just keeps on dancing, you know. Like, so air steps and lifts are two different things.
Now, Mr. Manning, I would like to take you back to those days when it was all starting, the dance halls and Lindy Hop. What role did it play for the people in Harlem at the time? How important was dance and the music at the time?
Well, during that period of time, which was like in the early 30s and during the 30s and the 40s, it was like depression time. And most of the people were depressed because, you know, a lot of them didn't have jobs. And those who had jobs, they were only getting paid like, you know, minimum, and they had to work long, long hours. So when they was finished, they wanted some type of entertainment. So dancing was the best thing that they could do. If people couldn't go to a ballroom to dance, they would give parties. And they used to call them like house rent parties. And the reason why they call them house rent parties is because, say, the person had an apartment and they couldn't pay the rent, they would give a party, you know, invite people in, and people would come in and pay like quarter or something like that, and they get an opportunity to dance, and the people would serve food for them, and you could also pay like 5 or 10 cents, and you could get yourself a mug and have some bathtub gin. And I say bathtub gin, it literally, that's what it was. They would give the hostess of the house or the host, give him, you know, like 10 cents, and he'd give them a mug, and they would go in the bathroom and stick it in the tub and get a, you know. So it was a bathtub gin. And so music was what helped the people during that period of time.
What does or what did the Savoy Dance Hall look like?
Savoy was one of the most elegant-looking ballrooms in the world. It was one block long and one block wide and had two bandstands, and it had two bands that play in the ballroom at all times. So it was continuous music. they had a big lounge with the chairs and tables. And back in those days, they didn't have air conditioning, so all the windows were like bay windows, you know, that you can open up the windows like in the summertime to let the breeze in. But that, if you was a dancer and you go to Savoy Ballroom, that didn't stop you from sweating. Because the dress code back in those days was dress up. You wore shirt, tie, jacket, and all that whenever you went out. So I would come home and my clothes would be soaking, you know, when I leave the Savoy Ballroom. So the Savoy Ballroom was like a gathering of different ethnic groups. It was the only ballroom in America that was integrated. Both black and whites could go there and dance together without anybody saying, oh, there's a black guy dancing with a white woman, you know, something like that. If you were in a Savoy Ballroom and somebody said, well, there's a white guy just walked in the ballroom, and the next thing you want to know is, can he dance? They don't want to know, you know, okay, he's white, so what, you know? It's a, can he dance? If he can dance, I'll watch him. If he can't dance, the heck with him, you know? And again, the Savoy Ballroom was a place where celebrities like to come also, you know, movie stars and big-time vaudeville stars and all that. They would come up there to watch the dancing because they know that when they went to the Savoy Ballroom, nobody bothered them. Nobody walked, run over there. Oh, can I have your autograph? Sign this and do that, all of that. It was just like a... Like, I've known times when I was up there and somebody say, hey, man, Clark Gable just walked into the ballroom. They say, yeah, can he dance? That's the next thing they want to know. They say, no, he can't dance. What the heck with him? You know, they don't even want to go see him.
Let's give a big hand for the Caledonians.
Now, we're here at a special location in Amsterdam. Could you describe where we are and what exactly will happen here?
Well, the place is called the Engel, which is like the angel, and it's referring to what the building used to be. It used to be a church, so it's a very nice old building, and there are all kinds of style elements coming from the 20s and the 30s from the inside. Of course, we have a big band because, well, big band is the kind of music we're talking about, and lots of people will dress up exactly like they did in the 30s and the 40s. Some will be like more exuberant than other people, so there's one guy in orange and really vibrant green, and we really have to wear sunglasses to look at him. And there are also people who wear more like the simple dresses with the suspenders and the tie and the cap hat, and ladies wear dresses and their hair really nice. So it's like, yeah, the picture from the 40s.
What is the essence of Lindy Hop that you really like?
I think the essence of Lindy Hop is really reflected in the music. It's like the music from the 30s and 40s with lots of improvisation in it. So when you're dancing, you're not doing like this step and then you're doing that step, but you're doing something with the music. You listen to the music, you hear something, and you react to that. And then your partner sees what you're doing and she sort of does something similar but slightly different, and you see that and you do something with that. So it's like you connect with your partner, you look at each other, you react to each other, and you react to the music. And that's the thing I really like and that I didn't find in any other dances. I think like the Argentinian tango is sort of similar, only the mood that goes with it is really, really different. It's not the joyous kind that I really like and I find in Lindy Hop.
That was the best thing about those days, because the musicians and the dancers were connected. A lot of times the dancer would be out on the floor and be doing a tricky step, and a musician is watching this particular dancer, and he's playing, and he sees this dancer do something, and he tries to do something that fits what that dancer is doing. So he gets himself a new riff, you know. And the dancers, by the same token, they listen to the band playing, and the band is playing something, and the dancer can dance to that music, and he finds a step that go with whatever the band is playing. So it's always a connection between the music and the dancers.
Now, I think in those years, you also performed and played with great names like Count Basie, Ella Fitzgerald, all those kinds of names. And did you have direct contact with them, or was it really kind of the people on the stage and then you were dancing before the stage?
The people that I work with, I came in contact with them because I say I work with them. Ella Fitzgerald, she was very close. Ella Fitzgerald and I were very close because we used to call each other sister and brother because she came from the Savoy Ballroom, the same as me. And she used to sing with Chick Webb's band. I guess everybody know about that. And when she would be up on the bandstand singing, when she finished singing, I'd say, hey, sis, come on down, let's dance. And she would come down off the bandstand and dance with me. So we got to know each other very well. And all the other, you know, like you said, I work with, well, I always like to say I work with royalty, which is like Count Basie and Duke Ellington and King of Swing and King of Heidi Ho. You know, I work with all these kings and queens and, you know, and Ella Fitzgerald and Billie Holiday, Ethel Waters, Josephine Baker, Lena Horne. I mean, you name them, I work with them, you know. So I had a very, very, and I've had a very good relationship with all those people because most of the time if we work together, we might be working at a nightclub and we would be working maybe 3 to 4 weeks at a time. So you got to know the people you work with, which was very good.
Sing hallelujah, hallelujah, and you'll shoot the blues away. When cares pursue you, hallelujah, get you through the darkest day. Satan lies.
Then a big change came, of course, with the war. It affected many lives, but you were conscripted and you had to go away. Did you have to leave the country for 5 years?
Well, I didn't have to leave, but I did leave. Yes, I was drafted into the Army. Not that I wanted to go at the time, but I was drafted into World War II. And I saw action in the Southwest Pacific. I was down in New Guinea and the Philippine Islands and Guam and Japan and those places like that. So, and I was in the Army for 5 years. So that kind of disrupted my dancing career.
Was there a big change before and after the war when it comes to Lindy Hop?
I was just telling these guys today, when I went into the Army, I was listening to big bands like Tommy Dorsey, Count Basie, Cab Calloway, Duke Ellington, you know, these big bands. You know? And I came out and they had these little groups like Dizzy Gillespie and his quartet or something like that. And and as I mentioned to these guys, I had the opportunity to work with Dizzy Gillespie at a theater in Washington, D.C., and he had this bebop band. It was a big difference. It was upset to my system, you know. So we just couldn't dance to it. And when I came off the stage, I knew Dizzy when he was a kid, so we were very good friends. And I asked him, can I use this word? No, I won't use it. But I said, what the kind of music is this, man, you know?
The music had changed, so there was less and less space for Lindy Hop-style dancing. So what happened then, kind of early 50s?
Well, I'd say I was working, but the jobs were getting fewer and fewer because television was coming into style and most of the vaudeville theaters were closing down, the ballrooms were closing down, and the only time you could get a job is if you go on television or you take a nightclub job, like out of town. And I had gotten married and started raising a family, and I was gone so much, my wife said, but Frankie, one of these days you come here and I ain't gonna be home. So you better get yourself a job here if you want to stay with me. So I got a job in the city. I went into the post office. And I figured I'd stay there for maybe about a year and the things would pick up again and I would go back to dancing. But what happened is that I stayed a few years, and I say a few, about 30. about 30 years in the post office. And but I didn't stop dancing because it was a group of us that got together and we would go to parties and things like that. And I had a tour, like when I was working in the post office, I worked from like 3:30 in the afternoon to 12 midnight. And then after 12 midnight, that's my time to shine. So we was like, hey, man, where's the party tonight? Say, over such and such a house. Yeah, okay, let's go. And I'll be out there, say, like 2, 3, or 4 o'clock in the morning because I didn't have to be to work till 3:30 the next day. So I was still dancing, but not professionally, just social dancing.
So basically, Lindy Hop stayed alive in people's houses.
Yes, that's true. But then, you know, like everything else, the music itself changed over a period of time, and it has started having rock and roll and, you know, and all that other kind of music. And then people stopped dancing with each other. There was no more partner dancing. So it was a sad time for me. But what the heck, I went on.
And then in the 80s, something special happened. Lindy Hop was back in the picture.
Yeah, isn't that something? Yeah, so it was like my last years in the post office, around about 1986. And I had got this call from Stephen Mitchell and Aaron Stevens. And they were in California. And they said, well, you know, they gave me a ring and said, are you Frankie Manning? So I said, yes, I am. Are you Frankie Manning, the famous dancer? I said, no, I'm Frankie Manning. So they said, but you dance, don't you? I said, yeah, when the music is playing. And they said, well, listen, we would like to come out to New York and like for you to teach us, you know. So I said, listen, man, I don't do that stuff anymore. So they said, well, you can just, we would come out and you could just watch us and maybe you can give us some pointers or something. So I said, okay, come on out. So they came out and I went to see them dance. And the first thing I thought, I said, well, these kids are just like me. When I first started out, I wanted to dance. And then somebody saw me dance and they say, oh, hey, he's good. So I saw these kids and I thought they were pretty good. I thought they had potential. And it turned out that they were right. I said, well, okay, I'll show you what I can. And then I helped them along and everything just started growing and growing and growing.
I guess interest in Lindy Hop is rising. It started like 10, 15 years ago. People watched the video, seeing Frankie Manning dance, and they thought, well, we want to do that. And gradually they came up with teachers who could teach them, and they started making a performance group. They're performing tonight, so that will be a great show to watch. And it's gradually growing, and now there are some people who even get you involved. So we're on the radio, we've been on national television, and that all sparks a certain kind of energy that will draw new people in, and we see that already happening, so that's good.
Do you think it's part of a bigger trend also in other countries, that there's just more interest worldwide in the 20s and 30s?
I guess what you see in fashion every so many years, like the 20s, the 30s, 40s, they all come back, and I guess that now we have such a period. You see Frank Sinatra's songs rising in popularity. And when people see us dancing to that music, they sort of connect with that. So, yeah, I think there's sort of a trend worldwide.
Grab your coat and get your hat. Leave your worry on the doorstep. Just direct your feet to the sunny side of the street.
There's a lot of new dancers are coming along now, and particularly those like in Amsterdam, and they have variations of things that they do, you know, like some of the same things that we used to do back in the 30s and 40s, and they're very much interested in. So, well, how did you guys do the Charleston back in those days? They want to know what the original, what the roots of what they're doing now. They want to know what the roots of those things are. And that's very interesting because I try to remember and say, well, what did I do then? You know, so I try to remember those things and try to show them this is the way we did it back in those days. And that's what the people are interested in now.
Now, somewhere I heard that you've got two new hits. Sorry. I heard it where? Somewhere. I don't know who. I'm not sure anymore whether I saw it in an article or somebody told me. But do you have two new hips?
No, I have one new hip. So that was wrong.
That was wrong. But anyway, so in terms of your dancing, you still do kind of the more quiet moves, or do you still do the full routine?
No, I don't do them air steps no more. I kind of stick to the floor, and I did have a hip replacement, which happened like in 1994. So it's about 10 years ago that I had a hip replacement.
Do you find that people kind of sometimes treat you as a porcelain cup, that they say don't do this or don't do that too much because you may break something or whatever?
No, nobody ever asked me to tell me don't do this because you might break something. They say, go ahead, Frankie, do that. They don't tell me don't do it. They tell me to do it. I say, wait a minute, I don't do that no more. I have to tell them I don't do it no more. But yeah, they're asking me to do anything. I mean, like when I first started back to teaching, the first thing anybody wanted to know is how to do an air step. And I said, well, how long have you been dancing? Said, I've been dancing for a week. And I said, you want to do an air step now? Why don't you learn how to dance first? Well, then, and I said, and I usually tell them, I say, you know, like I started dancing in 1927. And the first air step wasn't created till 1935. So that's 8 years later. I was dancing 8 years before I first tried an air step. So you learn how to dance first, and then the air step will come easy.
You could look at Frankie Manning like a teacher, but like there are so many good teachers all over the world, and I don't think that's the biggest benefit we can get from Frankie Manning. But the thing we really can learn from Frankie Manning is like how it was in those days. He's a great storyteller, and also while he teaches, that's the great part. He tells about how it used to be, and he shows us how it used to be, so we can get inspiration from the actual living legend who lived the Lindy Hop in the 30s. How we should think about that music and about that dance.
Is it important to keep the Lindy Hop alive, to make it vital and vibrant and let it grow also here in the Netherlands?
I think like in itself, there's no point in keeping the Lindy Hop alive, because then it's something like that belongs into a museum. It's like something that has to develop. And what you see, for instance, in the US is that people are taking hip hop dancing, which is actually something that came from Lindy Hop. And they're incorporating that back into the Lindy Hop, which gives a nice blend of like older style music with a newer dance and vice versa. And I want to keep the Lindy Hop alive because I really like it. And that's not for keeping it alive for its own sake, but because I really, really like it. And I see people who watch me and say, hey, that's cool, I want to do that as well, I like that. And of course, when you do something that you really like, you would like to do it with a group of people surrounding you doing the same thing. So that's why I want to keep it alive, not for itself, but because it's such a great dance.
It's not too many of us alive today that can talk about it, so that's why I'm famous, because I'm the only one around.
And because you're still dancing.
And because I'm still dancing, yes.
How do you do it? You've got a wonderful age, 90. It's amazing. You don't look 90.
I think 90 years old. Can you imagine that?
No. You don't even look 70.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing about it is that I think that that dancing actually is what, you know, that keeps me young, keeps me moving, and to me, Lindy Hopin is everything, and that's what keeps me going. If I wasn't dancing, I don't think I would live this long.
You've been listening to Hoppin' Alive, a program produced by Lisbeth De Backer. For more information about this documentary, please visit our website. The address is www.rnw.nl. And if you have a hip and hopping comment on this or any other of our programs, please email us at letters@rnw.nl. That's letters@rnw.nl. This has been a Radio Netherlands presentation.